If you're a parent who wants to learn tools, tips, and strategies to become a better parent and to teach your kids life skills and connect with them on a deeper level, then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Kate Godfrey, and welcome to the Authenticate podcast, where we'll discuss all things parenting, from boundaries to boredom, discipline to disrespect, and pretty much everything in between. I'm excited to support, encourage, and challenge you no matter where you are in your parenting journey and share mine with you along the way. Let's get started. Hey friends, welcome back, and I'm going to dive right in today. Today we are talking about the ABCs of parenting, and my good friend Rhonda came up with, it's as easy as A through E, because those are the letters we're going to cover today, and since there's five of them, and I want to dive into a little bit of them each more in depth, I'm going to get started. So the first letter of the alphabet is A. And I was thinking this is perfect for accountability. So now, no matter how old our kids are, except for babies, obviously, but toddlers, I'm including toddlers in this. No matter how old our kids are, it's never too early to start teaching them accountability. And we can teach them accountability in several different ways. But if you've ever paid attention to a toddler or you're currently parenting a toddler, they get into that quote, I do it stage, I do it, or I help, those kinds of things that they love to say. They're eager to try things on their own, and they are also eager to help mom and dad out. So this is a great time to teach your toddler or older kids to how to be helpers and help you around the house. So what I always recommend parents of young kids do, whether it's toddlers or maybe school age, even elementary age, whenever you think it's age appropriate for them to learn these things, is to first let them watch you do something while you explain age appropriately how to do it. And you talk them through it while you're doing it. And you can explain why you do it as a parent or why it needs to be done in the house so they kind of get that context. Second, allow them to help you do it while you talk through what you're doing. Again, so they can come alongside you, they can help you while you're doing it, you can let them try some things, and then again, you're going to talk about why you're doing it, what you're doing it, how to do it, all the things. Then, third, you can allow them to try the task on their own while you are watching and with your guidance. And if they're, you know, making a few mistakes, you can course correct, all those little things to help them on their way. And then when you feel that they've got it down, you can let them do it, and then boom, they have learned a new life skill, and they are also learning to help around the house. They're becoming part of that team as a family, and it's one thing that you can check off your box. And I think that it's so easy to discount the younger kids and think like, well, I should just do everything for them. And yes, maybe at certain ages, you definitely should. But when you notice that they're becoming a little more responsible, maybe a little more interested, they're trying to assert that independence and autonomy, jump on that and get them to start helping you around the house. Not only is this great bonding time and connection time while you're talking with them through it and you're doing it side by side, but they're learning that valuable life skill that they, yes, are going to need someday. I had the privilege yesterday of speaking to a local MOPS group. If you don't know what MOPS is, it's Mothers of Preschoolers group. And there were 14 women there that I had the privilege of speaking to. And many of them had preschoolers, but many of them also had elementary age kids. One of them had a middle schooler. And I told them, as much as it is hard for us to hear sometimes as parents, it's true that we are raising future adults. So we definitely don't want to hamstring our kids, so to speak, and do everything for them, even when they're little. We want to give them those opportunities to learn and be independent, have that autonomy, and learn to do things on their own so they slowly develop skills over time as they age and grow and mature. So by the time they are 18, 19, 20, they know how to do these things, and we've set them up for success. Kids can also learn how to show accountability by picking up their toys or books, making their beds, learning to get themselves dressed, brush their teeth, a whole host of other things. I'm sure you have tons of examples that you can think of right now on your own. Everything we teach them becomes not only a learning opportunity, but an opportunity to be accountable and again, learn that independence and that autonomy. Our kids can also show accountability in their actions and in their, letter B, boundaries. So, setting healthy boundaries is important in all relationships, as we know, but it's also especially important to set healthy boundaries with our kids and to teach them how to set healthy boundaries with each other. And again, boundaries can not only include physical boundaries with touching, hitting, personal space, but boundaries can also include our words, our time, and by time I mean playtime, bedtime, dinner time, time when you get up, setting those boundaries, and appropriate versus inappropriate behavior. Those are all boundaries. Boundaries also teach our children how to keep themselves safe. And this has been one of the most popular things I've shared online. And I shared it yesterday at the group, but we want to make sure that no matter how old our kids are, we want to teach them how to advocate for themselves. And one of the ways that we can do that, and when Nate and I had high school girls, we especially drilled this into them, but we also did it with our elementary boys as well. We do it with our own daughters. Teaching them to advocate for themselves, the first thing that you want to do is if your kids are upset about something, if they don't like a decision you made, if they want you to change a decision, tell them that they can come to you when they're calm and respectfully and to communicate clearly with you and sit down with you and say and state their case. And you can let them know, if you do it like that, I will be happy to listen to you. We can sit down together and you can state your case. You can also tell them to come with a solution in mind. This is not a complain fest. Again, they need to come to you respectfully and clearly state it, but not complain. They need to come with a solution in mind. They can state why they don't like it, or maybe think it's unfair, or think, hey, you know, I actually think I'm more mature than maybe this boundary that you put in place for me. And they can say why. And then you can tell them, hey, I'll listen to you and I will listen to your solution. If I don't agree with your solution, we can then come up with a solution we both agree on together. And that lets your kids feel heard. And it also lets them feel seen because you are willing to sit down with them and listen to them, talk about it, and come up with something together as a team. But finally, and most importantly, we want our kids to advocate for themselves when they are feeling unsafe. And that can be with a family member. And sometimes that's hard for us to hear, but unsafe around a family member, unsafe around any other person in their life, or unsafe in a situation. We never want to put our kids in that feeling of that they can't come tell us something because it is a family member or it's a particular situation. We want them to always feel that they could come to us or another trusted adult and tell us that they feel unsafe. They can explain why, and then we can go from there. And this is such a valuable skill for our kids to learn, not only when they're young, to learn to speak up for themselves, especially when they're feeling unsafe, but all throughout their lives, to set that healthy boundary so they know if something or someone makes them uncomfortable, they do not have to remain in that situation or near that person, and they can go to someone else and express their concerns and their feelings about that. Let's see. Also, when we're setting boundaries with our kids, we're not only helping to teach them social norms, because again, boundaries can also include how we act at dinner, and I already mentioned it, but appropriate and inappropriate behavior, appropriate and inappropriate words, conversation, things like that. And that definitely falls into social norms, but how to follow family rules and respect others. And that goes with siblings as well. I mentioned the physical space. You know, when your kids are younger or even when they're older, bursting into each other's rooms is not appropriate. If one child doesn't want to be touched or hit or tickled or whatever by another child, that other child needs to respect the first child's boundaries if they don't want to be touched at that time or in that way. Boundaries also teach our kids that, shocking, the world doesn't revolve around them. Everything is not about them and what they want and when they want it and how they want it. There are boundaries because there's other humans in the world who have feelings and personal space and their own boundaries as well. It also teaches them that there's other people to consider within all of that. And other people have thoughts and opinions too. So again, even if it's not just a physical boundary, other people have feelings on topics as well. Other people have thoughts. They have opinions. It's not just about you and what you think. Boundaries also teach our kids how to respect us as their parents, but also to respect their siblings, other members of the family, and others outside of the family as well. Which leads me to letter C, and here's two of them, connection and communication. So if you're a parent and you desire to be a good parent, you want to always, I would assume, have that constant, well, healthy connection and communication with your kids. And I shared this yesterday with the group too, but I would hope that most parents, I would hope all parents, want to have a connection with their kids that lasts a lifetime, not just a connection that lasts while they're in our homes, but that lasts a lifetime. I want my kids to come back after they're 18. I want them to come visit when they're in college. I want them to come, you know, see me or invite us to their families for whatever, holidays and everything else. I want to have that connection with my kids when they're older. I don't want them to move out and not hardly ever see them again because a connection has been broken or because it's already been so distant. We were created to connect with each other. We're not meant to be islands or to be alone. And this doesn't mean it's not okay to be an introvert. I'm not talking about the introverts here, but I am talking about human connection. We were created for that. And we are meant to love and encourage, support, uplift, and help one another. And what better way to do that than within a family unit? And our children, especially the little ones, are so desperate to connect with us. And sometimes, even though we may not even realize it, and I've been talking with my really good friend at work about this, sometimes their negative behavior is that seeking of attention because they are trying to connect with us. It's a direct message about just how much they want to connect because they just want to be by us. They want to be near us. And sometimes that involves even acting out against their siblings because they're trying to get our attention in that way so they don't have to share or compete. Our kids learn everything from us and they experience the world through us, especially when they're little. So it's important that we validate their feelings and spend intentional time with them in order to foster healthy connections. And again, validating their feelings and letting them run wild because they're having a feeling are two very different things. That can go right back to boundaries. But we want to let our kids know, hey, I understand how you're feeling, or you must be feeling like this. And part of the way we can connect with them and help them with this is by giving them words to their feelings. Oh, you must be feeling angry. Oh, are you feeling frustrated right now? Are you feeling sad right now? Do you feel anxious right now? And we can explain what those feelings feel like. But when our kids are younger, when they're feeling all sorts of emotions, it can be so overwhelming that it does scare them. They feel unsafe and then they will act out negatively. So then they will seek that connection from us. So instead of flipping out or losing our cool, it's so important that we as the adults, as the parents, remain calm, get ourselves regulated and centered, and then we can address our kids calmly and really get to that root behavior, that 90% that's under the water. If you have heard the iceberg analogy, we see 10% of what's going on top, but there's 90% below the surface. So it's our job to get to that 90% to figure out why they're acting out. Why are they having this behavior? What just happened? And helping them label their feelings, validating those feelings, but then again, talking through, but this behavior is still not appropriate, even though you're feeling this way. And sometimes even still instituting consequences because of maybe the behavior that they exhibited. And working with them and explaining maybe different choices we can make next time and working through it that way. And I'm going to touch on that more in a second. So I kind of got to D a second, but doing that with our kids, validating their feelings, but not necessarily excusing the behavior that goes with the feelings, if that makes sense. Let me see what else. Oh, and I also wanted to share, and I shared this yesterday with the moms, and I know everybody is in a different stage of life or place of life and can't always do this, but I will say that I do feel so blessed when we worked at our boarding school that I could not only be a working mom and pour into the other students and their lives, but I also got to raise my kids because I was living where I was working. And that also allowed me the opportunity to homeschool my girls for 7 years. I homeschooled Trinity for a full 7. And because Sydney's 2 years younger, she got homeschooled for a full 5 before they went to their private school. But I also do feel that that was such a beautiful time for us and such a special time that we really got to connect as mother and daughters, and that connection still continues to this day, which I'm so grateful for. I shared with the mom's class yesterday that you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, those teenage years are so hard and they're impossible. Oh, you have teenage girls. And we've been through teenage girls, 8 years of it, and it doesn't really faze us. But I also think the toddler years can be hard. The elementary years can be hard. So can the middle school years. So each stage and season of parenting can be hard. It can be hard in different ways, but I definitely don't believe that our kids become, they hit 13 and all of a sudden become crazy. Yes. Are there more hormones? Of course. Are they trying to figure things out? Do they get stuck in their own heads? Of course. And it can be difficult to navigate that way sometimes, but I don't think that we need to lose connection with our kids just because they're teenagers or assume, oh, they don't want to spend time with mom and dad anymore. Sometimes, even though they don't verbalize it, they need us more than ever during their teenage years because it is such a hard time, because it's confusing, because they're trying to figure out who they are, because they're trying to fit into their friend group and match those social norms. And they're starting to have more homework and more responsibilities and start working and then start driving, all of those things. And it's hard. So if you notice your child pulling away, go after them. You know, don't harass them, but go after them. Get to the root of what's going on. Seek intentional ways to spend time with them because they don't just flip a switch when they're 13 and all of a sudden mom and dad aren't super cool. I have two children who are a testament to this. They still love spending time with us. They still walk beside us, sometimes hold our hand. My girls still fight over who sits beside me on the couch when we watch a movie or a TV show. I don't understand why they still do that, but I'm glad, you know, not that they fight, but they both want to be with me. And that's super important to me. And I want to maintain that connection with them throughout their lives. And I know that Nate does too. So I just wanted to share that homeschooling them, I really think solidified that. And also having that opportunity to be a working mom and a stay-at-home mom at the same time. And yeah, we also need to be attentive to their different personalities and their interests. We may not correct our children the same way or discipline them in the same way or necessarily speak to them in the same way because of their personality. Some children may respond more to, you know, the gentle speech or the nudging and things like that. Other kids may need you to be more firm and more direct. So you're going to have to navigate that because you know your kids best. And see what they need based on their age, their stage, their personality, all of those things. We can also, you know, foster that connection and communication with our kids by letting them know that we do find joy in them and by spending time with them, seeking to do things that they enjoy doing, even if it's something we're like, what is this? This is kind of weird. Seeking to do something they want to do with them. And also inviting them into our world. My husband loves to mountain bike. My girls aren't into that at all. But he loves to also be outdoors and loves to cook. And sometimes my youngest, Sydney, will come, you know, with him and she'll help him make dinner. But find opportunities where you can do things together so they can feel loved, they can feel valued, and that creates and fosters more of that connection and creates memories along the way, honestly. Also taking the time to listen and again, validate the feelings, not excusing the behavior, but validate feelings. Even if there's no behavior attached to that, maybe they had a really hard day at school. Maybe they're having a friend issue. Maybe something's going on and really validating those feelings and saying, hey, you know, when I was your age, I felt that way too. Or I still feel that way sometimes, or I'm struggling with this right now. Obviously not dumping all your adult problems on them, doing it appropriately, but connecting in that way. So they, again, feel seen and heard. We also want to teach our children, and I touched on this earlier, how to appropriately and respectfully communicate with us as well. And again, this isn't just when they are coming to advocate for themselves, when they want something or have something that they want to change, but just in daily conversation. And even when they're upset, teaching them how to, you know, maybe take time for themselves, take a walk, go to their room to calm down, and then come down and communicate respectfully, using appropriate words when they're upset, but communicating respectfully with all members of the family. And that teaches them how to communicate respectfully with people outside of the family as well, teachers, coaches, someday their boss, all of those things. And teaching them that what they say to us is just as important as how they say it to us, because sometimes the words may be appropriate, but maybe the tone isn't, or the body language. So keep that in mind as well. And it's important that we as the parents, which can be so hard, to set this example first, especially when we are feeling frustrated or tired or losing patience, because they are going to learn how to speak and how to act, yes, through us and from us. So we need to be setting that example. And that's why it's so important and why I'm passionate about the whole point of being an intentional parent and being a conscious parent, always being self-aware of what we're saying, how we're saying it. And yes, we're going to screw it up because we're humans. But then going back to our kids and saying, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said it that way, or I shouldn't have said it at all. But if we can become more conscious and learn to stop ourselves when we are feeling those feelings, so we don't say anything that we're going to regret later, we will be ahead of the game. And it's a journey, it's a process, and we're not always going to nail it every time, and that's okay. So next, when we are teaching our children to communicate respectfully with us and others, it fosters that connection with them. And then we can move into letter D, discipline. And when we have to discipline our kids, even though it's not enjoyable for us, it's not enjoyable for them, it does make it easier on both of us if we, like I just said, remain calm, keeping ourselves in check, not flying off the handle because we just saw them do something, just heard them say something that wasn't appropriate, keeping ourselves in check. Because if we're not calm, our kids aren't going to receive the message. They're going to feel bad, and it's not going to go well from the get-go. And we don't want our kids to relate to us from a place of fear. And discipline is different than punishment. They are two wildly different things. And again, I mentioned this yesterday when I was speaking to the MOPS group. How we were parented really may be influencing how we are parenting. So think about that. If you tend to be a yeller, if you tend to be whatever, fill in the blank, did that come from one of your parents or both of your parents or whoever raised you? Did you get that from them? Because a lot of this stuff is generational and we don't even realize that we're passing it on. And then we're getting frustrated in our parenting, wondering why things aren't working. Why are we trying so hard? Why aren't they listening? All of those types of things, because we are not adopting new and healthier ways to communicate and to teach and to discipline. We are just repeating those same old negative patterns from the way we were parented. So think about that one first. So when we discipline our kids, we want to remain calm. Make sure we're keeping ourselves in check before we even approach our kids. Once you're calm, you can then speak to your child's behavior. And going back to what I said before, we want to discuss our child's behavior with them and explain why it was disrespectful or inappropriate. Give them the context for it. Don't just come at them and say, you shouldn't have done that. But let them know why, so they have the context, they can think about it, and they start to understand. Make sure you're focusing on their behavior and not their personhood. We do not want to drift into shaming our kids. We don't want to think them to think that they are bad, but what they did was maybe a bad choice or it was an inappropriate behavior, and explaining why. And also, while you're disciplining your children, speak to the positive qualities of their character as well and give examples of times you saw them doing the right thing, being kind, helping their sibling, helping a friend. And also be mindful of pointing those out on a daily basis as well. And this can be hard to remember for us. The day goes fast. We get caught up in things. We're making dinner. We're cleaning up. We're driving here. We're driving there. It's bedtime. All of the things. But try to point out positive things that your kids are doing, because the more they hear that, they're going to realize that's behavior you want to see. And that's pouring into that emotional bank. And they're going to start to feel proud of themselves and say, oh, that, like, mom noticed when I helped out around the house. Dad noticed when I was kind to my sister. Those types of things. But point it out as well when you're disciplining your kids. You don't want it to be like this negative thing, even though you might be calm and you're in teaching mode. But you want to point out the positive things too and say, hey, you have all these great things going on. I'm a little confused as to why you would have XYZ. And that can open up that conversation. And when it opens up the conversation, let your kids talk. This is not a one-way street here. It should be a conversation with your kids. Get your child's perspective on their behavior. Help them, again, label their feelings. What were they thinking? How were they feeling when this negative behavior happened? And then discuss other choices they could have made at that time and can make in the future. talk through them, talk through that with them. You can even role play this with them, especially if they're younger, to help them understand more. And so they can start to visualize, hey, if this starts to creep up again with someone at school or with my sibling, this is how I can respond. Or I know I can go to mom or dad or a teacher or whoever and ask for help before I even engage and possibly get myself in trouble. And most importantly, tell your child that you're disciplining them because you love them. And it might sound weird to say, but I've had so many students, especially the high schoolers, who were never disciplined or they were just punished when they exhibited poor behavior. So associating love and discipline was a new concept for them. And this might be a new concept for you. But when someone who loves you takes the time to calmly help you correct your behavior out of a place of love, it changes everything and it promotes positive behavior change. It's also important to note that modeling appropriate behavior again and speech is our job, and that includes apologizing to our kids when we mess up. And I know I just mentioned this, but this is so key. It's so important. And again, many of us may not have ever been apologized to by our parents because that was their generation. They weren't apologized to by their parents. You were just disciplined or punished. You were spanked. You didn't get dinner. And that was that. There was no more. You didn't get to say anything. You know what I'm talking about. And they didn't apologize because they were the parent and you were just expected to do what you're told. But when we apologize to our kids and we model that behavior, especially when we know we've messed up, it shows our kids that we are taking accountability for our words, our actions, and we are modeling humility when we do that. And then that also can diffuse the situation. They're hearing us do that, and then they learn that they can also do that to others and apologize to them when they've messed up. And it doesn't have to be this weird, awkward thing, although it can be at first, but it can really just teach them that humility and that everybody messes up and that's okay. And it teaches them that we're accountable for our actions as well as adults. It's not just them, that if they mess up, that there's things that happen. You can talk through, hey, when I messed up at work, my boss said this. And then I had to correct that. You can talk about those real life situations and examples with them. Finally, letter E, expectations. Expectations are not only important to set, not only with our partners, our spouses, friends, and others in our lives, but they are especially important to set with our children. When our kids don't know what we expect of them, they're going to act out. They're going to run wild. That can be stressful for them not to know what we expect. So they just are going to do whatever. And then we're over here, you know, stressed out. We're angry. We're frustrated. We're overwhelmed. But then we don't look back and realize I never set that expectation. So they don't know what they're supposed to be doing right now. Expectations and boundaries. They're both safeguards for our kids. And it lets our kids know what they can and can't do. And again, the expectations can change as our children grow, as they mature. Again, if you have more than one child, it can change based on their personality. There might be one expectation for one child because of their age or personality and maturity level than there is for another one. And that might be hard for them, but you can sit down and explain that to them so they understand why. But they're safeguards for our kids. It lets them know what they can and can't do, what is and isn't appropriate, and as well as what's coming. I found that when we had, well, the high school girls too, but when we had elementary boys, I would write down every day, this is what you need to get done, and this is what's coming up for the day. So it wasn't like a surprise that all of a sudden after dinner, this activity was happening, or that we were going here tonight, or whatever it is. And some kids really, it settles them and helps them feel calm when they know what to expect, when they know it's coming. So it's not a surprise. And I think that can really help the family unit as well. So everybody's not going different directions or, I forgot you said that, or I didn't know we were doing that tonight. So everybody can really be on the same page. When children know what's expected of them, I think I just said this, it gives them that sense of safety and security. And I know this also can really help kids who are on the spectrum, but it can help especially little kids, but it really helps everybody. I know that I like routine. I like to know what's coming and not be surprised. And sometimes, yeah, things are going to happen and there's going to be some surprises. There are going to be some impromptu moments or somebody has a great idea and you're like, yeah, let's go, just go do that. But, you know, overall day to day, knowing what's expected really helps them feel safe, calm, and secure. It also prevents miscommunication and chaos when we don't know what to expect or what they expect of us. And that's true for our adult relationships, right? There's expectations in marriage. There's expectations between friends. If you didn't have expectations of your friend to XYZ or communicate that expectation to them, that can cause problems in a friendship or in a marriage. Maybe you just expect your husband to take out the trash every night or, you know, once a week, whatever. And they don't know that expectation. And then you're getting all upset over here because the trash isn't taken out, but you didn't communicate that. You didn't talk that through. So it's the same for our kids. We need to communicate with them what we expect from them. This will also help our kids to learn to set their own expectations for themselves as well as others as they get older and begin to mature. They can start setting their own expectations. And by that, I mean, they know that if they want to get good grades, their expectation for themselves is that they come home and they do their homework and that they need to stay focused. And that can be something they set for themselves. And when they learn what's expected of them from us, from teachers, coaches, they can learn what to expect from others in their lives and what they will and won't tolerate based on those expectations. And again, I know I just mentioned our adult friendships or relationships, but as our kids grow and they start to have those friendships and relationships, they know what they can expect from others in their lives. And I shared the example of, you know, whether you have girls or boys or both, it's important to teach our girls how boys should treat them. We want our little girls to know that. We want our girls to know that while they're dating, this is what you should expect from a boy when you're dating a boy. This is what you should expect for how they should treat you. And we want to teach our boys, this is how we expect you to treat a girl. Not only your sister, but other girls in your lives. This is what you say and do to respect a girl. And I think that's just so important. I think we've really gotten lost in that as a society. Let me see what else. It's also especially important to communicate. I think I just said this, but communicate our expectations to our kids and not just assume they know. As I just stated, we can get in trouble when we assume, and we know what assume means, and it can just eliminate that miscommunication. It can eliminate fights and frustration, all those types of things. And yes, for our kids, when they're little or if it's new, we may need to restate our expectations of them several times before they remember, before they get it, or practice it, things like that. When you come home from school, your expectation is that you will, I don't know, do your chores, and then you do your homework. Maybe they have a pet to take care of. Maybe their expectation after dinner is to help clean up. So whatever that is, it may take some time for them to learn it if they're young or if it's a new expectation. So give them grace and give them some wiggle room in that. And of course, age-appropriate expectations, which would also come in the form of family rules and conduct that should be followed. And you can have a healthy discussion when the expectations aren't met. You can talk to your kids about that. And again, institute consequences if they need to be instituted. And consequences can be positive and they can be negative. Hey, when you do this, this is the positive consequence that will maybe naturally come from it. Or hey, mom and dad will do this if you, you know, some families, if you get on honor roll, you get really good grades. Maybe you get taken out to dinner. Maybe you get an ice cream. Maybe you get to go to Starbucks. Maybe you get a special toy, whatever that is. Or, hey, you didn't do so well on your report card or you didn't study for that test. And so kind of this is the consequence for that in our house. So, again, you know your family best. You know how it runs best. You know your kids best and their personalities, all of those things. But these are the ABCs that I came up with that I think can be really helpful to you as parents. I know I covered a lot. Listen to this again if you need to. Jot some notes down. I will try to turn this into some online reels and helpful posts and things like that so you can get it in tidbits as well since it is so much. But I hope this was helpful. Please share it with somebody else, another parent, if you know it would be helpful for them. Reach out anytime if you have questions, if you have comments. Please reach out either via Facebook, Instagram. You can always find me there. Where you can find me is also in the show notes, and as well as some freebies. If you want to work with me, reach out as well. You can sign up for a free 30-minute consult with me, and we can go from there. lots of things. But yeah, please share this with someone else. Please rate and review. That helps me to get seen and heard by so many more parents. My passion is to help parents parent well and parent better. We're all on this parenting journey together. I'm still learning. You guys are learning. We're doing it together. We're being better together for our kids so they can be as successful and healthy as possible. So I hope you guys are well. I hope you have had a great week, and I will catch you next week. Bye.